Hello, and thanks for joining me today. I'm Karen Cushman of Cushman Creative, and we are a branding and marketing firm that works exclusively with life science companies and biomedical nonprofits to support their efforts in advancing human health. Today, we are going to focus on the second group, biomedical research institutions, whose aim is really to connect with donors and other supporters that are important to moving their research forward. I've invited my good friend, Chris Connor, the host of Life Science Marketing Radio, to join us today. Hi, Chris.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. So we're going to talk about the benefits of podcasting for biomedical nonprofits. Chris has hosted a podcast of his own for over 2.5 years, and we've recently just been talking about how development teams at these institutions, whose primary goal is to fundraise through telling the story of their institution's research, could really, one, gain some major efficiencies in content creation, but also really broaden their efforts by adding audio to the marketing mix that they're already doing. Most of these institutions have blogs, they're producing print material, magazines, newsletters, annual appeals, videos, lots of content, but they're not necessarily doing audio. And so before we jump in, I just wanted to frame it up a little bit more and talk about some of the challenges that they have. And so from my personal experience, I know the primary challenge when it comes to content creation for development teams is just feeling strapped by, I mean, a lot of people feel this, by limited resources and time, staffing, and finances. But for this group in particular, their aim is to really allow donors to connect firsthand with the scientists. And so that's another challenge, is to try to pull those scientists in as storytellers to help bring donors closer to their work. So that was a really long intro, but I thought it was important to kind of state why we were doing this. So let's get started, Chris.
All right, let's dive into it.
Great. So let's start by, you know, just jumping in at a high level about what the general benefits are of podcasting, how easy it is to do, so that there is no intimidation here, and how we really feel like this is something they can just add to the mix that they're already doing. It doesn't have to be a big new project, a big new commitment. So do you want to speak to that for a second, Chris?
Yeah, sure. So you talk about the ease of doing a podcast, mm-hmm. which for nonprofits that are struggling to make content or engage their donors in a new way, mm-hmm. Podcasting, and let's shrink it down for now to just talking about audio content. So some people think of a podcast as a series, and it's, you know, a never ending thing over time, which it certainly can be and has benefits. But even creating a single episode like we're doing here, creating it is very easy. And as you mentioned, for scientists who might be shy about talking to donors, they might feel much more comfortable talking to an executive director who they speak with maybe on a regular basis, and just having a conversation and being able to talk about what their work means to them, to the organization, to obviously the audience that they're trying to reach, not just the donors, but the people who will benefit from that research. It's a more casual environment, and it also, with respect to maybe making them more comfortable in front of an audience, but also a lot of scientists might feel, let's say, some difficulty writing an article, because it's natural that everyone, when they're writing, feels pressure to make it perfect. You know, you feel like you're back in school and it's an essay and it's going to be graded, and that takes time, you know, it takes thought, and that takes them away from their other work. Whereas having a conversation is a very natural thing to do. And then, you know, that can be edited in audio, of course, if necessary, but also then that can just form the basis of written content on your blog, for example, to have a writer take it and massage it into a message without having to burden the scientist with that.
Yeah, I think that's really important. So to speak to that too, I think going back to the high level of the benefits of this is the indexable content that's automatically created without having to think about a lot about that. Do you want to talk about that also? Because I know it's not just about posting an audio file, but like you do with your podcast, you also post the written content there.
Exactly. So if you're looking for SEO benefits, search engine optimization, having more words on the page, because that's what the search engines are looking at. They aren't really indexing audio. I take the transcript of my podcast and I put it on the page as well. And I also create a PDF out of it that's downloadable, because everybody consumes content differently. So some people will listen to the podcast, some people will read that transcript right on the page, and others will And a significant number, almost as many people will download the PDF of my podcast episodes as download the audio and listen to it that way. So you're covering all those audiences and getting that possibility of an SEO boost by having, you know, significant amount of content on your page about that topic.
Great. And I think too with this, one thing to point out, I think that was really great that you said having the scientist talk with the director, somebody that they're used to talking with all the time. But another benefit here with research institutes in particular is they may have partnerships that are happening around the world. And so this is a great way to get those two people together, or more than two people together, to talk about that partnership or the work that they're doing together, which otherwise may not happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other great thing about it is, you know, you can't make a video with two people in different places. Well, you can do it by the same mechanism you could for a podcast, which is on Skype. And so you could get a, you know, webcam view of both people talking at the same time. But you couldn't do that with a video production team. They had to go one place and then back to the other to have a conversation. So this kind of covers that. And sort of leads into the other benefit is that people can listen to audio without having to watch it. So the window of time in which a podcast can be consumed is, I would say, larger than what it is for a video. In other words, when people are driving to work or mowing the lawn or jogging, washing the dishes, whatever it is they do to fill their time with audio, that's the opportunity.
Okay, so Chris, can you talk a little bit about the popularity of podcasts? It's definitely been an up-and-coming content medium for us, and you're so deep in it. I think you have a good pulse on what it was and what it is now.
Sure, it's very positive. And there, Edison Research is a research company. They do all the polling for elections and so on, but they do every year a study called the Infinite Dial, which is about consumption of all kinds of audio content. And for the last, let's say, I want to say 12 years since podcasting has existed, that's been part of their survey. And I won't go through the whole thing, but 40% of, and I think this is all US based, of people over the age of 12 have listened to a podcast at some point in their life, and 24% of them in the last month, 15% of people over the age of 12 have listened in the last week. And of weekly listeners, people listen to 5 shows per week. So there's an audience that is hungry for audio content. And that's a little bit, again, of the magic, not just of the intimacy of the medium, but of people who are really engaged with this type of content. So you won't get the broadest audience with a podcast, but you will get people who are very into your topic. So my podcast, for example, is in a pretty small niche, life science marketing. And my audience are people who market reagents and instruments to scientists. So it's not huge, but people reach out to me and tell me how excited they are to have found my podcast. And someone bumped into me at a trade show and said, "Hey, I recognize you from Twitter because I follow your podcast." So even though my numbers aren't huge, that kind of tells you the passion of the audience for whatever topic they're finding. And I think that's the other benefit. And then podcast has been growing, you know, steadily over the 12 years. So year over year, listenership keeps going up and up and up.
So would you say, you know, I would say for the audience we're speaking with today, their, if you were looking at demographics, their audience is mainly 55 and over. So that seems like the market that would really be those regular weekly listeners potentially.
Yeah. So I don't have that data. I just missed it. So I grabbed the 25 to 54 age group, which of which 31% people have listened in the last month.
Yeah.
And it's slightly less. I want to say, I don't have it in front of me, so I'm going to guess it was around 27% of those folks in the next higher age group. It wasn't down a lot, but I know it was a little less than the main peak.
But I think that's another really important point is, you know, the next part of what these organizations are trying to do is to start, you know, as baby boomers age, start to bring in that next generation and really reaching out to them now through the forms of content that they are already watching or reading. And so podcasts, as you just spoke about, is another way to reach to that audience and another reason why they may want to consider starting this. What else do we miss on the high level stuff here?
I feel like we covered most of the high level.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to talk a little bit about speaking to that group, you know, how easy it is to share. That's another huge benefit here with creating podcasts. And you and I were talking last week about how it can play within Twitter. So if we're speaking back to that younger generation that may be already on Twitter, you know, this is a really great way to get in front of that audience.
Exactly. So we'll talk a little bit later about, you know, hosting your podcast if you want to host it somewhere else. There's a service called SoundCloud, which some people might be familiar with. It independent musicians put their music up there, but you can put your podcast up there, and I think there's a SoundCloud app that people can find it through and maybe even subscribe to your particular or favorite you as a producer. But the great thing about SoundCloud that I haven't found with any other hosting is that you can actually play a SoundCloud file within Twitter just the way you would play a video within Twitter. And so that's probably the easiest way to share. So if you've been building a Twitter audience and you put that in front of them, at least they can discover your audio content. Mm-hmm. And that's nice. They don't have to, you know, click through to another link. That usually means they're looking at something when they're doing it. But if it's on their phone, yeah, they're finding it and they're getting right into your content right there.
So let's talk about a little bit about your, you know, the last 2.5 years that you've been doing podcasts. And can you talk a little bit about how audio is so different than reading or even watching a video? And because I think largely what this group is looking to do, if we're talking about donors specifically here, is to really build an emotional connection with that audience, have them feel close to their work, close to the scientists, and really care about and feel more connected to the power of the results that they may be doing, or even sometimes just the process of scientific research and how long that takes and the dedication. You know, I think with audio content, everything else kind of falls away. And you, more than anybody, probably really understand that form of communication as being very powerful just from as long as you've been doing it and the results that you've seen from it and how it's grown for you.
Yeah, there are many aspects to it. So we already talked about the window of opportunity in which someone can listen without having to watch. More importantly than that, it's even more so than video, a very intimate medium, because you're literally in that person's ear. And that person, if they haven't seen you, I've talked about this before, they create a picture of you in their head. And so that's a very powerful. It ties into the whole idea of storytelling. And I think audio content and podcasting are ideal for storytelling that way. And I think it creates a stronger impact in the mind of the listener than watching a video would. And you can probably hold their attention for a much longer time. And the other thing I believe is true about audio content is because you get those longer windows of time, they're more open to processing the idea. In other words, if someone's watching a video at work, they're going to certainly be interrupted by an email or a knock on the door or a phone call, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're out riding your bike or driving to work, those things are less likely to happen. So that story is going into your head and you actually have time to think about what it means and come up with new ideas. And it's much more stimulating that way. So I think it's stickier that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think even if you are in your office, it somehow makes everything fall away. You pay attention to it more because you're just listening. You're not also stimulated by other sounds and other visuals and other distractions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a generally pleasurable way to consume content. And for the podcasts I like, and I'm starting, I will say a lot of the podcasts I listened to initially were kind of instructional how-to podcasts, some of them around podcasting and other content marketing concepts. But now I find myself drifting to much more story-oriented podcasts, and I'm really enjoying those as well. So there's both ends of the spectrum. There's how do you do this, and it's more fact-based and interview-based. And then there's, you know, what happened and what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm glad you pointed that out, because I think that's really what we're talking about today, being very story-oriented and bringing people into that process of discovery, and that it is never-ending. So it's a great way to continue conversations and continue work and continue to draw your audience in, I think, when it comes to this type of work and use of a podcast. There's not a start and finish like there would be with an instructional video.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So yeah, let's talk a little bit more about the wide use of this. So we've been largely talking about reaching out with donors, but with podcasts, there might be other avenues that biomedical research organizations want to pursue with regard to educational content, courses and conferences for recruitment. So we just talked about Twitter a little bit. LinkedIn is another really great tool to start to develop tactics around recruiting, obviously courses and conferences, not so much donor relations, but I think that this is a way that other parts of the organization, educational departments, could start to think about podcasting and promotion around specific courses and specific conferences or events they might be having at their organization.
Yeah, I think all those tactics are valid. If I were going to go through them, of course, you know, you have your blog, and we talked a little bit about creating indexable content for your website. So you can put a transcript on the podcast page, for example, but that doesn't prohibit you from taking that transcript and turning it into a blog article, or as I've done on my site and you've helped and David Schifrin has helped, you know, combine content from multiple interviews and turn them into an article. So maybe you got quotes from a number of people in a particular interest area and can put something together that way. So there's always that chance of repurposing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think also, you know, important that you just mentioned, you know, us working together, David, different people. So again, bringing in different scientific partners, it could be that they have a high profile speaker that's coming in for a course or conference, and interviewing them ahead of time might be a great way to get participation up, to encourage others to also become speakers. So I think the possibilities are really kind of limitless, and all go back to what we were talking about earlier about that in-person interview and everything really falling away and being able to connect with people that might be, you know, in another country, another part of the U.S. and hard to get in. Again, you know, we're talking about recruitment here and also about courses and conferences, so not necessarily donor relations.
Yeah, and that you brought to mind something that I hadn't really thought of, but when you talk about biomedical research organizations, I'm imagining like many scientific departments, sure, for lack of a better word, bring in outside speakers to talk about a topic in the other scientists, right? And so you don't have to just use your own scientists. You'd love to hear from people outside the organization that have a common interest in that particular area of research and find out from them, one, what's going on, what they're doing, but also what they think about the research that you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing I wanted to mention here too is also connecting with media, that these are really great stories to share with media to start to build stronger relationships with them. And again, giving them another form of getting to know you besides just reading and video and such.
Yeah, absolutely. So media is the same I would take the same approach with LinkedIn. So when you talk about recruitment, I'm assuming you're talking about recruitment of donors. But having that little bit of audio content, even if it's just a short snippet, because you're trying to get someone's attention, that you can send to them. So you say on LinkedIn, hey, you know, found your profile. Looks like we have a common interest in this research area. Here's a little audio bit of what we've been doing. Would love to talk to you more about this. And obviously the media would appreciate the same thing. They are always looking for, yeah, news, and being helpful in that way with pre-existing content is a great way to make a connection.
Yeah, and actually, when I was talking about recruitment, I was actually talking about recruiting of research staff, not so much donors, although that could certainly be happening as well. But connecting with younger researchers that are up and coming, whether it's for staff positions or for educational opportunities that might be happening at some of these institutions. So let's jump over into how to get people interested in the blog. So, or in, not just the blog, the podcast. I think, you know, these, some of what we're coming up with here can apply to written content, such as articles on your blog or podcasting, but the importance of really thinking about planning for promotion and what some of those tactics and channels might be so that they can really get people interested in the content, even thinking about that before creating the podcast.
I would say the best way to get people interested, of course, you may be using the podcast to grow your list, but it's really better at growing your engagement. So it's helpful to have a decent email list to start. That's what I would start with. Okay. It's pretty hard to grow a podcast from scratch, and I was close to doing that. So I had an email list before I started my podcast, but it wasn't huge. I think I got a good initial response. So the tactic I've taken is at the end of every podcast, rather than asking people to come to my site as the call to action, I ask them to find two people who would also be interested and tell them about it. And I think that's been, you know, fairly successful. And it's just an easier ask because they might, first of all, if they're listening to it on their phone, they're not in a position to come to my website and do anything. And they're probably not going to think about that later. But it's highly likely that they're, if my topic is right, that in their day-to-day work with someone, it comes up and they go, oh, you know, I heard this thing on Life Science Marketing Radio. You should go listen to it. So asking people to do word of mouth promotion for your audio content. And it's my sense, you know, that, as I said, the people that listen to podcasts, listen to a lot of them, and they know the other people that are into listening to podcasts. So they want to be a sharer in that way, right? They want to be the person who discovered it. So,
yeah, to that point too, I think, you know, because this is such a different thing than an article. So if a scientist in their work was featured in a podcast versus just an article that was written on the institution's page, they would also be much more willing or wanting to share it with their audience, even if it's other researchers. You know, I think just the viral nature of a podcast versus a written article is another really big benefit to doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. So the people, you know, the guests on the podcast should definitely be sharing it with their audience, and you know, everybody in your organization hopefully is sharing it in some way.
Mm-hmm. One thing I wanted to mention is that thinking about a podcast, so far we've just talked about adding it to your content mix. So adding it as a piece of content on your blog, for example. But I think that there's some really important ways that nonprofit research organizations could be incorporating podcasts into other outreach that they're doing. So direct development directors are always looking for more ways to personalize their contact with donors. And for me, I've been thinking about, you know, annual appeals and different strategies that have been done over and over and over, and looking at podcasts as a way to bring in something new to that mix. For example, it might be a really personal letter that a development director is writing to a donor that they know. And in that letter, it says, I'd like to introduce you to such and such researcher and the work that they're doing. Go here to hear about it firsthand from them. I think that can be really powerful. But again, part of a larger effort that might be for an annual appeal or some other direct mail approach.
I love that idea. I mean, it's so personal. So first of all, the director's writing a personal letter, which is nice. And then for the donor to, at the very least, if they don't at some point end up meeting the scientist, to hear from them directly about their work. Also, you know, you could create stories about the people who are benefiting or hoping to benefit from the work and what it would mean to them. I think those are all great opportunities. And again, because of the nature of audio content, listening to these people directly telling their stories, and in a way, so it's more personal for the donor, it's more comfortable for the scientist, and the scientist gets to talk about what the work really means rather than just here's my data. I think it's so much more engaging, and, you know, pulling those things together has to be a useful thing for organizations to to raise money.
Yeah, and so far we've just talked about the idea of telling science stories, and I think I have a client now who's working on a campaign that we've titled "This Is Why," and these stories aren't just from members of their scientific team; they're also from other folks in the community that are close to their organization. They may have been on the board. They're all donors, of course, but their perspectives are very different. And I could see a podcast like this working great in the mix of all of that they're doing. They're doing different direct mail postcards and, you know, lots of different points of contact. But again, that type of letter or just adding a podcast to the mix of this for the reasons that we said earlier would be pretty powerful, I think.
Sure. I mean, if you're hearing another donor or someone with experience of the organization say, this is why it's important to me, one of those things is going to resonate. And of course, if you're of the donor mindset, you know, I want to be on this team or, you know, here's why it's important to me. Maybe I have a completely different reason and I want to tell you, you know, and you could even ask people to, if they're thinking about it, share their stories about why. How do you see this working? You know, what would make you happy as a donor?
You know, yeah, it becomes more of a two-way conversation.
And why does that matter to you? Why are you even thinking about this? Because you must have a reason.
Well, so let's get into a little bit of around how you get started. We've talked a lot about the value of doing this, and I think one of the most important parts of talking today is to tell people how easy it is to get it set up. So could you walk us through what's needed and how easy it is to get going?
Yeah. So this is what will be shocking to most people, I think, is the ease of which you can create this audio content. So Karen and I are sitting in front of our computers talking to each other through microphones or a headset, which helps the audio quality, but they're not expensive. So, you know, you can get a headset with decent sound quality for $25. I'm using a $50 microphone, and the software is, you can get it for free, the recording software, or for a very low price. So many people are familiar using Skype. And Skype won't record your call, but you can make the call through Skype and record it through other software that I've used called Avair. And we can put these in show notes or however you want to do it, Karen. Right now, we're using a platform called Zencastr, which records each of us on our own computer. And then we'll upload those audio files to a Dropbox account. And so we get really high quality because it's not recording through the internet. It's recording each of us where we're sitting. And then we'll put those together in a program like Audacity or GarageBand. So those are the two common editing programs. People should know that editing an audio file, of course, you can easily outsource it to people who can do that for you. But if you have any inclination at all to do it yourself, really editing an audio file is almost as easy, if not as easy, as editing a Word document, because you listen and you watch the waveforms go by and you figure out where somebody said something and you drag across the part you don't want, you select it and delete it. It's that easy. And you would do the same thing if you wanted to move bits and pieces around. The act of editing, although it, you know, is time consuming as it is to edit a Word document, it's conceptually as simple. We mentioned transcription, which is, I highly recommend because it's inexpensive. I'm using a site called rev.com, R-E-V, and they charge $1 a minute of audio, and you will get it back within a day. Typically, I'm getting them back in a couple of hours from when I send them in. So it's really nice, and that's really helpful in organizing your thoughts when you're going to write up the description of what you're doing. So I'll go through the transcript, which are highly accurate. You know, once in a while, there's something that's difficult to hear or a word they might not be familiar with. So I do recommend checking them. But, you know, I read through the transcript and I highlight the important parts and I pull those out to write the notes that will go on the page that describes what's in the episode. And then there's how do you get it out to the web? So if you use SoundCloud, you can embed a SoundCloud file on any web page. That's very simple. And then there are other hosting platforms, for example, Libsyn, which is short for liberal or liberated. What is it? What is it? It's liberal syndication. Will host your podcast. So basically they create an RSS feed, and that's what, if you want to produce many, many episodes and have them show up on in the iTunes store or whatever, that's, you know, that's one of the services that can do that for you. So for I use a different platform, but it automatically goes from my website whenever I post a new episode and hit publish on the page, and that feed updates to the iTunes store and my new episode shows up automatically. So there's nothing to be done after you tell the iTunes store that this is the feed that you should be watching for new episodes. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much it, but it's all very easy and very inexpensive. I mean, the biggest cost would be the time of anyone who had to spend time editing and producing it if you wanted to go that far. But I do very little production and very little editing typically on my episodes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, yeah, of course there's, you know, some time commitment, but I think as far as, like you were speaking earlier about writing an article and crafting that, in gosh, I don't know what the percentage would be, but quite a bit more time than just, I mean, you and I have maybe invested a couple of hours in talking about this and making an outline and putting it together. And, you know, that's pretty efficient, I think.
Yeah, it's so much more efficient than, one, a person sitting down to a blank page, trying to think of what they're going to say, writing it out, organizing it, getting it right, sending it to someone else, have them agree that it's right and back and forth, than to essentially spill your brains into an audio file, get a transcript and look at it and say, what can we use?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So to wrap up here, I think, you know, since we're talking about this being efficient, then that leaves time to really think about why you're doing this in the first place. And again, back to the promotion aspect, really planning that out. So I just, you know, we're talking about storytelling, and I think it's important to really think about what the outcome is that you're looking for in doing a podcast. That, yes, we're looking to tell a story, but what's the action that you want people to take after that? Do you want them to continue to listen? Where do you want them to go? Are you leading them to your site to learn about more research? I think super important to think about that ahead of time. And important, even though we've said this is easy, it doesn't need to be a big commitment to doing podcasts on a regular basis. My personal feeling is that, sure, you could definitely do one and see how it goes, but that one and done approach, you know, tends to not be so effective as if you thought about it as a small series, perhaps. Because, of course, there's going to be some startup, you know, costs and getting the team around who's going to do what. And so the more you do, the more efficient that becomes. So I was thinking about this too. You could think about it a couple of different ways as, you know, a series. Maybe you want to do one a quarter, or again, like we were talking about with a particular campaign, maybe there's a few that you would want to commit to in that series. We were talking about the client that I have that has that This Is Why campaign. You know, I could see them, if that's an annual campaign they're going to roll out for 12 months, you know, they could easily do mix three into that. What do you think about that, Chris? What do you feel, what do you see some people doing when they're just thinking about entering into doing podcasting, and what feels like a right amount of not series, but what's the word I'm looking for? Sorry.
Episodes.
Episodes. Sorry. There you go. What's the right amount of episodes to think about?
Well, as you say, doing one of anything, you know, in the context of a campaign may not be enough, but it I can imagine, you know, one good one, and depending on what else you're doing, might be. And I will say that when I started with one. I didn't really set out to create a series. I was doing a promotion for a course that I was doing with someone else. And I said, mm-hmm. Hey, after we're done filming this promotion, because we made a short video to go on a landing page, I said, let's sit down and talk about talk about his expertise in creating video content. And I'll put it up as a podcast on my site. And that was before I was really thinking series. So I put that up as audio content. Then several months later, I interviewed one of my old mentors, and I did the same thing with that. I just put it up in a blog post. So it was just an audio file in a blog post. And then that was around the time I started realizing, you know, that podcasting was growing in terms of marketing people's businesses. And then I said, okay, now I'm going to do this on a regular basis. So it was the very first one I did, I think, was in May of 2014, but I didn't really start my series until March of 2015. So I started slowly. I had no commitment to make a number. But I would say, you know, if you're thinking about doing one, it's worth thinking about how can we make three? You're not going to get a huge amount of traction on one. It might be useful for certain things or to send to specific individuals. If you can make it a series and start to get people come back, then maybe it's more shareable and people say, hey, look at this thing that this organization is doing. They're telling some great stories over here. And you start to see, because it's slow going to grow a podcast, but if you're going to do one, you should think about how you can do a few. I'm always, you know, I'm all about repurposing and thinking about if you're going to spend a little effort on something, get the most you can out of it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So what's one thing that you wish you knew going in? Is there any downside that you think folks should be aware of?
Yeah, the downside of podcasting, like I said, is you get a lot of engagement. It's hard to know exactly what your metrics are. And so for me, the best metric might be growth in my email list, even though it's not the only way I get new people. But I think it's a big contributor to people growing my list. What I wish I had known going in is that it's really important when you're thinking about creating an episode to understand what the point of that episode is. And maybe that sounds obvious, but I learned very early on, I was speaking to a thought leader in our industry, and we covered a broad range of topics because he had written a book. And I said, well, let's talk about this and that and the other. When it went to promoting that episode, I thought, what do I say about this? Because we didn't really go into depth about any one thing. It was really hard that way. So from that point on, I always, I do a pre-interview with everyone I speak to, and I have to feel in my head that I know, okay, this is where this is going. This is the thing that I can write a headline around that when people look at it, they're going to know exactly this is for them or not. It's nice to talk to people, but you have to have a point. And yeah, that has to be
right.
And that's kind of the main thing. There was a ton of great information in there. It was just hard for me to wrap it up and sell it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I noticed Salk Institute is one organization that has brought a podcast into their mix. And to speak to that, it looks like they're interviewing researchers on their work, but from a more personal level, like getting into how some of their hobbies may have led them into their research and what they do in their free time and all of that. So getting to know them on a personal level, which I thought was really cool. So each episode is with a specific researcher, and they've labeled it, I think, Salk Talk or something like that. So again, very casual, but bringing in that personal. So of course, it's about their work, their research, but it's also about getting to know them on a personal level, which I think is kind of interesting. So
I think it's a great idea. That's what, you know, people, you've heard the phrase Wired for Story. I recommend people read the book called Wired for Story. It's about a woman who coaches people on writing novels. But the reality is, a story, a challenge that was overcome is what we lock onto in our brains. And just talking about what you do at work isn't as interesting as why you do what you do at work, which may have come from a hobby. I mean, I'm about to start, and I'm going to say it publicly for the first time, another podcast right now, and it's all going to be about stories, personal stories of people, because I know that that's going to be powerful. And I've seen there are other podcasts. I wish I could think of the name of it right now, but Michael Green, Washington University in St. Louis produces a podcast about scientists, and it's about their work, but it's largely about them and what do they read and what are they all about. And it has a huge number of listeners, I believe. That's what gets people's attention. And so you think hard about not just the science that you're trying to promote, but you know the stories around it of the scientists, of the other donors, of the people who will benefit from the research.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And one group we didn't mention so far is the need for this audience to connect with legislature and really believe in their work, because that's another way of moving research forward and getting public funding and other private funding from larger groups is super important when it comes to political viewpoints and such.
Absolutely. And you know, my guess would be they may not understand the details of the science, but they'll understand the why if you tell it right.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So, Chris, thanks so much for taking the time to be with me today and talk through this. And I wanted to mention that Chris's website, lifesciencemarketingradio.com, very easy to find, would suggest anybody that's interested thinking about doing this to check out the work that he's done. Might also want to check out the Salk Institute's podcast. It's pretty easy to find as another example of folks that are already doing this. And I think that's all for today.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you, Karen. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome, Chris. We'll speak soon.